Okay, good evening, everyone. Nice to be on this on the Zoom once again with some of you that we've done in the past. I've thoroughly enjoyed those sharing we had in the past, and hopefully that you will benefit from these as well. I am first want to mention one thing once again to start is that we are hopefully going to have the format to be similar to what we've done in the past, if you recall, where I hope to speak for just 20 minutes, Simirtz Hashem, then only 5 minutes for questions. At any point during the shiur, you're more than welcome to chat some questions, whether publicly or privately to me. And then I will begin with those questions in the last 5 minutes. And then after that, you're welcome to unmute yourself if anybody else has any other questions. Also, Simirtz Hashem, I hope to have the shiurim up on our website after they are done, not the video, just the audio. So if you missed a shiur, you missed part of a shiur, you want to hear a shiur again, Mirtz Hashem, hopefully Vadim will be able to get them up on the website sometime very, very soon. And we thank him very much for his tech help in that regard. Okay, so let's get started. Amir La'akum. Amir La'akum, the halachos of what you're allowed to tell a guy, not allowed to tell a guy on Shabbos. These halachos are incredibly, incredibly important. The concept of when you think about it, just simply saying something on Shabbos to somebody, and all of a sudden that having some sort of a halachic reality, we know it's not a foreign concept to us in Yiddishkeit. There are many areas in halacha where we create halachic spiritual realities, both positive and negative, as we know, with our speech, right? How many words of tefillah do we recite? The ability to make a bracha, the ability to connect with the Ribbono Shel Olam just through our words. We're not doing anything. We're not actively involved in anything. We're just speaking. And all of a sudden, we are creating this halachic reality, this connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A person can make a vow. A person can make a neder. A person can create an actual halachic reality simply by speaking. And of course, we know on the opposite end of the spectrum as well, when it comes to negative results, we know it's the same thing. How much Lashon Hara do we have the capacity to say and to violate? How much of that, how many times do we have the capacity to violate those Yisurim, those prohibitions of Lashon Hara, simply by speaking? And so as human beings, we are made to speak. And in Yiddishkeit, we all know that our ability to speak can create and can destroy so much in our world. And so therefore, the notion of there being an Isser, a prohibition on Shabbos of simply speaking, right? Because that's what Amir La'akum is. I tell the guy, please turn this light on for me, right? Or turn the light off for me, or anything of that nature. It should not be a shock to us, right? The concept of speaking and creating a halachic reality is not something which is foreign to us. But at the same time, the way that it pertains to Shabbos is still very, very perplexing. Because if you think about it, I'm not doing anything. When it comes to making a vow, when it comes to making a bracha, I'm thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to thank Hashem. I thank Hashem. There's a concept in the Dharma of making vows. Here, we know the Torah says, don't do malacha on Shabbos. Don't treat Shabbos like a weekday. Don't actively involve yourselves in constructing things on any of the 39 categories of work. So here I am sitting back in my lounge chair on Shabbos and just directing somebody to do something for me. I haven't done anything. And so the question is, why is it usher at all? Why is it forbidden for a person to tell somebody else, to tell a guy to do malacha for you on Shabbos? Obviously the guy is not obligated in keeping Shabbos. So what's the big deal? What did I do in the end of the day? So the basic reasoning behind it, the general concept which the Rambam formulates is, as he says, we do not want Shabbos to be treated lightly. And we can all imagine what Shabbos would be like if you were allowed to, you know, tell a guy to do something for you. Just imagine what it would be like. You're sitting back in your chair, and you say, hey, please turn this light on, please turn this light off. Can you please go to the store for me, to Walmart, to pick up a few things for me? Can you, turn the crock pot higher, make it lower? Imagine what Shabbos would be like if Amir La'akum was permissible. Imagine how different it would be. And so the Rambam says, understandably, so that Shabbos should be given the proper spirit, it should be treated properly. Chazal said it's usher to tell a guy to do something on Shabbos that you are not allowed to do. Now, first of all, be mindful of the fact that Amir La'akum is also by other halachos as well, which is not actually so commonly known. And generally, the Gemara actually discusses this. Is Amir La'akam only something which is a Shabbos halacha, or does it apply to anything? And the Gemara's conclusion, it applies to anything. The same way, a person is not allowed to, wear, or person cannot do malacha, for example, on Cholamoid, right? You're not supposed to tell a goy to do malacha for you on Cholamoid. Amir La'akam applies there as well, applies to any area of halacha. Whatever a person cannot do, a person is not allowed to tell a goy to do on their behalf. So, but even though the Rambam is saying the reasoning behind it, the overall idea is so that Shabbos should not be treated lightly. There is still a difference in opinion in the Rishonim, the rabbis of 1,000 years ago, as to the halachic way of looking at the what Chazal forbade. What are the halachic mechanics of why it's forbidden? And this makes a real difference. So we need to understand the two reasons given in the Rishonim as to why Chazal made telling a guy to do something for you on Shabbos to be awesome. There are two reasons given in the Rishonim. Reason number one, that this falls under the banner of the Pasuk in Yeshaya of Mimso Chatzecha V'Daber Delver. We know the Navi tells us that our mundane activities and our mundane speech on Shabbos is not supposed to be the same as during the week, right? The same, the types of activities that we do and the type of speech that we do. As we all know, we're not supposed to sit there at the Shabbos table and talk about a business deal that we're going to have on Monday or on Wednesday. We're going to talk about driving here, and doing these errands and checking out these sales. And we're talking about mundane activities on Shabbos. The way that we talk, the way that we conduct ourselves on Shabbos is supposed to be categorically different than we do during the week. And so that is an Isdur Rabbanon of a Daber Daber, of speaking about mundane activities. And therefore, some Rishonim learn that telling a guy on Shabbos, please turn this light on for me, telling a guy to do something which involves malacha and involves violating Shabbos is all under the umbrella of the Daber Daber, of speaking about something which is inappropriate on Shabbos. So that's one understanding behind why Chazal said that it's prohibited. The other reason in the Rishon Givim is that when I tell a guy to do something at my command, in a certain sense, that person is acting as my shliach. You're acting as my messenger. I'm telling him, please do this on my behalf. And so, therefore, if I would be allowed to create a messenger on Shabbos and tell a guy to do something for me, Chazal are concerned that you may end up doing it yourself. If you were allowed to go around just directing, Gentiles left and right, do this for me, do that for me, cook this for me, turn these lights off, turn these lights on or off, put away this muksa item, put away that muksa item. Call my boss if you don't mind. Tell him I'm going to be late this week. I won't be able to make it into work until Wednesday. Go to the CVS and pick up something for me. If you were allowed to make all those directives on Shabbos, Chazal were concerned at some point you may come to do it yourself. So there are two reasons given why it's forbidden. Number one is v'daber davar. It is speech which is mundane speech. And number two, it is in a certain sense, it's like you are assigning a proxy, an agent on your behalf. And therefore there's a concern that if that were to be allowed, you may come to do it yourself. These reasons matter. And for many different reasons, I'll give you one right now. And this is not everybody's aware of this. So we all know that the classic case of Amir La'akam, which is forbidden, is to tell a guy on Shabbos to do something for you on that Shabbos. So if I tell a guy on Shabbos, please turn this light on in my house, please turn the air conditioning on, that's usser, right? That is the isser d'rabban of Amir La'akam. I'm telling the guy on Shabbos to do malacha for me on Shabbos. Now what happens if when I speak to the guy on Friday or Thursday or Sunday, and I say, do me a favor, my friend, this coming Saturday morning, can you please turn the air conditioning on higher at 11 o'clock in the morning. Do me a favor. I'm trying to save money on my energy bill, my electricity bill. This coming Friday evening, today is Tuesday. This coming Friday evening, can you please shut the lights off in my house in my basement at 11 p.m.? I'm speaking before Shabbos, telling the guy to do it for me on Shabbos. Or I speak on Shabbos for the guy to do something for me after Shabbos. So on Shabbos, I tell my Gentile neighbor, on this coming Monday, can you please mow my lawn? this coming Wednesday, would you be able to do this, run this errand for me? I'm speaking on Shabbos, but the act is going to take place after Shabbos. So what happens in those two cases? We know that if I speak on Shabbos to be done on Shabbos, that's the classical case of Amir La'akum. But what if I speak before Shabbos for it to be done on Shabbos? In that case, when did I speak? I spoke during the week. When I spoke, did I violate the Dabar Davar of speaking on Shabbos about mundane activities? No, I was talking on Tuesday. So I did not violate the Dabar Davar. However, when was the act carried out? It was carried out on Shabbos. The act that I appointed him to do as my messenger, he did for me on Shabbos. And so therefore, if the reason behind Amir La'akum was only because of a Dabar Davar, then it'll be permissible for me on Tuesday to tell him to do something for me on Shabbos. But if the reason behind Amir La'akum is because by when he does something for me, there's a concern as my messenger, I may end up doing it myself. Then if the act takes place on Shabbos, it's still going to be usur, even if I spoke before Shabbos. And so too, in the flip side, in the last case, let's say I speak on Shabbos for the going to do malacha for me on Monday. So when am I speaking? I'm talking on Shabbos. I'm saying, my Gentile friend, please, this coming Monday, can you run this errand for me? Did I violate the Dabar Davar? I certainly did, talking about mundane activities. But however, when does he act as my messenger? Does he actually act as my messenger during the week? Not on Shabbos. So if the reason behind Amir La'akum is V'dabar Davar, it will be forbidden. If the reason behind Amir La'akum is because I'm appointing him as my messenger, it will be permissible. So what is the reason behind it? Which reason do we hold of? Guess what? We hold of both. And therefore, in all those three cases, Amir La'akum is forbidden. Doesn't make a difference if I speak to him on Shabbos to do it for me on Shabbos, or if I speak to him before Shabbos to do it for me on Shabbos, or if I speak to him on Shabbos to do it for me after Shabbos. At any point in time, once I verbalize a command to a Gentile to do malacha for me, in any of those three cases, that is going to be for me. So those two reasons are very important, because we are going to have certain nuances and certain details that actually may have halachic ramifications based on these reasons that we have been describing. So those are the two reasons behind it, and those are the different cases where it is forbidden as far as the timing of it. Okay, so now moving on to the next part, and for those who came in a few minutes late, I'm going to be speaking for approximately 20 minutes, another 5-6 minutes. If anybody has any questions, you can publicly or privately put them in the chat. I'll get to them first in 5 minutes, as well as afterwards. You're welcome to unmute yourself and ask any questions. If you missed part of the shiur, Mirtz Hashem, we'll get them on the website. You can catch them at some point soon in Mirtz Hashem. Okay, so now getting into the actual halachos. There is one subset discussion of Amir La'akum that we have to have first. And as this also is a prelude, a necessary prelude, to the rest of the halachos of Amir La'akum. And this has to do with not telling the goy anything, not hinting to the goy in any way, and we're gonna get to all of this. But what about if I say nothing, but the goy does something for me? I didn't ask him to do it for me. There is no amira at all, no hint, no sign language, no third base sign or football sign from the coaches, no sort of hand signals of any kind, no communication. The goy knows that I would like something to be done for lunch. He knows I can't do it, or whatever he knows, and he does it for me. For example, let's say I am sitting in my house, and all of a sudden, one of my children turns off the light in my living room Friday night, and now I'm reading, and now I can't see. I can't read, I can't learn by the light. And now all of a sudden, I have a guy in the house, whatever, there's a waitress in the house that Shabbos, or whatever it was, or my neighbor comes by and realizes that I probably want the light on. After all, the person knows I was just sitting there reading, and now my 2-year-old came over and turned the light off. So what does he do? He turns the light on for me. I didn't tell him to do it. I didn't hint. He just did it. But now I'm benefiting from the malacha that a goy did on Shabbos. And he did it for me. He didn't do it for himself. He did it for me. So the halacha is that the Isser Derabanan, the rabbinical prohibition of Amir La'akum, it includes benefiting from that which a guy does for you, even if you don't direct him to do it. Not only that, it's forbidden for you, the person who directly benefits, or for any other Jew. This is a knas of Chazal. Chazal did not want us to get any benefit from that which a guy does for a Jew on Shabbos, whether it's the person he did it for, their family, their friends, or anybody else, because it's all part of the decree. It's all part of the gzera of Chazal that may come, that you may end up, if that were to be allowed, a person may end up directly asking them to do something for you, which may end up causing the person to do it themselves. So it's all part of the umbrella gzera, the decree of Chazal, of Amir La'akum, and that is not benefiting from that which a guy does for a Jew on Shabbos. Now, there are a few exceptions to when it's permissible. So for example, give you an example. If, let's say my heat is in a certain room is completely shut off, and a guy realizes that and they turn the heat on in the room. And if in that room beforehand, I really couldn't, it was so cold, I couldn't at all be in that room. And now all of a sudden it's nice and toasty. I am supposed to avoid that room because that will be benefiting from that which a guy does for me on Shabbos. But there are a couple of exceptions. Exception number one, the decree on benefiting from that which a guy does for a Jew only applies to benefits that the guy had intended to do for a Yid. If I'm in a hotel for Shabbos, and most of the people in the hotel are Gentiles, and all of a sudden on a Saturday morning, the goyim turn the lights, the workers turn the lights on in the various conference rooms in the hotel, am I now allowed to go into that conference room on Shabbos and learn and read? After all, the light was off, and now a guy turned it on Shabbos. The answer is, it's permissible. Why? Because since the majority of the people who are in the hotel are not Jewish, we follow the majority in this regard. The assumption is the guy is not doing it for a Jew per se. He's doing it for the most people, which are goyim. And therefore, since he's not doing it for a Jew, there's no Isser Derabanan to prevent me from benefiting from that particular act of malacha. But if the majority of those in that hotel are Jews, now it becomes a problem. Now it becomes a problem. Because then the worker knows, I'm doing this for these people. I know that they're Jewish. And so therefore, it is therefore going to be usher for any of those Jewish residents in that hotel for that Shabbos to benefit from that light on Shabbos or any other type of work that a guy may do for a Yid on Shabbos. So that's exception number one, that the prohibition of getting benefit from that which a guy does is only to benefit that the only when the guy had intended to do it for a Jew, whether it's for you or for another Yid. But if it was not intended to be done for a Yid, or if the majority of the people were not Jewish, then you are allowed to benefit from that light or from that any other work on Shabbos that he does. That's exception number one. Exception number two is that the decree that this gzera only applies to proactive, meaningful, substantial benefits. Meaning, it's something that without what he did, I would not be allowed to do this function at all. For example, if there is a room which is pitch dark, it's simply unreadable. I can't read in that room, even if I tried hard. There's no light coming into that room. In such a room, if the guy turns the light on, I can't, even without me asking, but he did it for me, I am not allowed to now read in that room, because that's benefiting from the malacha which a guy did for a Yid on Shabbos. However, what if the room was already lit, but dimly lit? There was a small light on, or there was light coming through from the windows, because it was during the day, or from another room in the house. And at this point, reading in this room is doable. Is it difficult? A little bit. Uncomfortable? A little bit. But it's doable. I can read. I can look closely and I can read. If I can anyways do the act that I want to do, and now the guy senses I want it on and he turns the lights on, so now I can read more in an easier way, that is considered only a modified, an additional benefit, a tosefes anas, an additional benefit. It is not considered a complete benefit, and there is no injunction, there's no rabbinic injunction to prevent me from getting benefit from that light. That's a very important thing. So if the lights go off in my house on a Shabbos day, and there's and now it's a little dark in my dining room, my child turned the light off, and there's light coming through, so we can still eat, we can still read, it's just not so comfortable. A guy is somewhere around and the guy senses that this family probably wants the light on, and they know we can't do whatever, and they turn the light on for us, right? They turn the light on for me, for us. So in that situation, we do not have to go to another room because we were anyways able to read. Now it's a little bit easier. In that case, it's okay. I remember once as a teenager, sitting in my shul growing up in one of the rooms, in one of the libraries in a small room. It was, the lights were off. There was some light coming from the hallway. And all of a sudden, you know, one of the janitors who was there full time in the shul passing by saw me, put me in there and turned the light on. Clearly he was doing it for me. And I remember knowing these halachas very vaguely, unsure, can I now sit here and read and play games and hang out and have fun, or do I have to leave? So it all depends. If I was able to do that act even prior to what the guy did, just with, albeit with difficulty, all he's doing is making it easier for me. Chazal did not go that far. Chazal said, we want to ensure we're going to forbid substantial tangible benefits, but not when it is only an additional benefit to what was already there before. That is an exception number. That is another case where it is permissible. And very, very quickly, the final one is where the guy is doing malacha for yid, but it is not a tangible benefit. It is only removing something which is bothering me. So for example, if I'm sitting in a dark room and I can't read and the guy turns the light on, that act of turning the light on gives me the ability to now do this new tangible act of reading, which I couldn't do before. It wasn't possible. As opposed to, let's say I want to go to sleep in a room, the light's on, and the guy senses that and the guy turns the light off. In that case, all the guy did was remove an impediment. He did not create a tangible, proactive, meaningful benefit. He just removed something that was bothering me. The light was in my way, so I couldn't fall asleep. Now the light is no longer there. Now I can fall asleep. For example, another example, if the heating is off, and let's say the heating is off in the house, it's freezing cold. We forgot to turn the heat on completely. It's freezing cold. And it's really not functional at all in the house right now. Again, putting aside if it's dangerous or whatever. And now the guy on his own turns the heat on for me on Shabbos. So in that case, now he is providing active heat. And therefore, he is giving me a tangible benefit that now I can live in this room. I can hang out in this room. But what about if it was too hot in the room? He didn't turn the air conditioning on. He just turned the heat off. He removed that which was bothering me. In that situation, there is no injunction that you're not allowed to get benefit from that which the guy did. So basically, to make it simple, turning things on is very often going to be a proactive benefit. And unless it's only, it's incremental, then it will be forbidden. But turning things off are usually just simply removing that which is bothering me. That's not considered an actively tangible benefit. And in that case, it would be permissible. So just to sum up very, very briefly to end. So we established that the reasons behind Amira La'akum, the general reason behind this from the Rambam, to make sure Shabbos is different than during the week, that Shabbos should not be treated lightly in our eyes. There were two ways of understanding the halachic mechanics of that. Number one is the Dabar Davar, the same way what we speak about on Shabbos should not be that which we speak about during the week. And therefore, speaking about doing malacha, albeit directing a guy to do so, falls under that injunction. The other reason is that I am appointing him as like my proxy, as my agent, and therefore we're concerned a person may end up doing it themselves if that were to be permissible. And those are the two reasons. Because we hold of both of those reasons, we are stringent like all both those reasons. It doesn't matter if I direct the guy on Tuesday to do malacha for me on Shabbos, direct him on Shabbos for Shabbos, or on Shabbos for after Shabbos, either of those are going to be forbidden. And the first category that we introduced was the notion of not saying anything, not hinting anything in any way, no sign language or nothing, just the guy does malacha for a yid, whether it's for me or for somebody else. If he does that, then there's a kanas that any yid is not allowed to benefit from that malach, from that which he did for a yid on Shabbos. But there are three exceptions. Number one, only if he did it for a yid. He didn't do it for a guy. If he did it for a guy, then it's permissible for me. Number two is that it was the type of a malacha that was only incremental. It wasn't a full-fledged benefit. I was already able to read. Now I could read better. Or number three, it is, and the third exception is if it will be the type of benefit that's simply removing something that's bothering me versus proactively constructing something that's going to help me do something on Shabbos. Those are the three exceptions to where that would be permissible, but otherwise it would be forbidden. There are many other details to this. Maybe we'll begin next week with just a couple of other examples of where this applies, but that is a basic gist of the first parts of this discussion of Amir Lahak. Okay, this ends the shiur. I'm going to take a look at the chat. I don't see any questions just yet, which is totally fine. If anybody would like to unmute themselves or quickly message something, go ahead. Any questions on the
I actually just unmuted myself. I have two questions. One of them, maybe I'm kind of answering at the same time I'm asking. At all these, you know, I go to conventions, Torah Masorah conventions. I mean, clearly putting lights on and off, the heating, the air conditioning is for Jews because that's the whole convention, all the people in the hotel. But I guess when they put the lights on in the morning, maybe the room isn't pitch black. So maybe there's...
Yeah, so I'm going to get to that starting next week. There are a couple of things to mention about that.
Yeah. And the other thing is also as far as like the heat, let's say then you notice the heat is off. So it's not freezing yet, but you know it's going to get freezing and it's 30 degrees. So really you could be in the room at that point where it is, but anticipating what's going to be, and maybe at 1 o'clock in the morning, there's not going to be any guy around, and maybe then it would be more of a problem. You know, like it's so by putting on the heat, you could stay in the room with the way it is, but.
So correct. If the room is usable for whatever you want to use it for. Right. So that's why the example I gave was that it's simply, you can't go in there. It's just, yeah. You know, it's just so cold. It's just nobody you're right. I mean, when it comes to heating and air conditioning, we could technically bundle up. And in most of the situations, the room is accessible, is usable, albeit uncomfortably. So I was just giving an extreme example, I guess, where it's, you know, frigid and it's just simply not usable. But you're right. In many situations, when it comes to heating and air conditioning, the room is already usable, just not so comfortable. And now if a guy on his own would then, you know, put on the heat or put on the air conditioning to make it warmer, to make it cooler, even though it's a proactive benefit, but at the same time, it's incremental, and therefore that would be permissible. I'll give you an example that came up also once very, very quickly. This was that we discussed this in our Chabura, is there was somebody who was, a person was about tshuva, and they came from a big mixed family, and they hadn't, some sort of relative of some kind that wasn't Jewish, and was heating up water on Shabbos in the house for themselves. They were heating up water for themselves, and the person thought, okay, they already heated up the water. I didn't ask them to do it, and they didn't do it for me. They did it for themselves, right? They didn't do it for me. There was some leftover water left in the pitcher, in the urn, after they finished using it. So the person thought to themselves, okay, so now can I use that water to make myself a nice cup of coffee on Shabbos? I didn't direct the person to do it for me. I did not, the person was doing it not for me. The person was doing it for themselves. It was for a guy, not for a yid. Assume that's the case. And that's the case based on what we've been saying until now. It would sound like it should be permissible for me to benefit and to therefore partake of that hot water. But I mentioned this example specifically because next week we're going to mention one more exception as a stringency, where in a situation like this, we have to be concerned. But we'll get to that next week. Some of these shiurim are going to build off each other. The concepts are going to repeat themselves. So in this first session, I'm just giving some basic concepts, but we're going to get to some more practical examples in Mirtz Hashem next week. Any other questions? Okay, wonderful. Glad, hopefully you all enjoyed. And as always, during the week, you're more than welcome to reach out at any time during the week with any questions by WhatsApp, text, or email, or calling. Mirtz Hashem, I hope to get this year on the audio online, and looking forward to next week for the second year. Have a wonderful evening. Take care, everyone.